Welcome to Work is Something You Do, Not Somewhere You Go, The Case for Telework, sponsored by FedScoop, HP, Intel, and Microsoft on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's panel will discuss how federal agencies are looking at telework as a way to lower the cost of government, attract and retain top talent, enable emergency readiness plans, lower their carbon footprint, and take advantage of technology improvements to work more efficiently. Now here's your host, Chris Dorabeck.
We have a great panel today. We're talking about telework and how you can actually make it happen. Bill Piott is a special advisor to the administrator at the General Services Administration. On the line, Pamela Buda. She is the DoD Policy Program Manager for Work-Life Programs for the Civilian Personnel Management Service at the Defense Department. Also on the line, Nigel Ballard, he's Director of Federal Marketing at Intel. Susie Adams, she is the Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal. And Christina Morrison, she is right here in studio with me. She is Federal Marketing Manager at HP. I'm going to start off, and Pamela, I'm going to start with you. We've been talking telework. I mean, I'm a very, very old man, and we've been talking about this for a long time. And sometimes it feels like we make just inches of progress every year. Am I crazy?
No, I don't think you're crazy.
So why does this seem to be so difficult?
I think in the Department of Defense, I would say in the Department of Defense, the barriers and the administrative challenges to telework that have been prevalent in the government are the same as the challenges everybody else is experiencing, the same as the challenges identified in the 2009 OPM report on the status of telework in the federal government. Issues such as management resistance, perhaps organizational barriers, office coverage, IT security, and funding for technology equipment.
And funding in terms of having the technology in place?
Typically, yes.
Yeah. Bill Piott with GSA, and GSA, you guys are doing a lot of really cool stuff. And in fact, on my show, The Dorabeck Insider, we talked to the folks out of Kansas City where they're doing a pilot to actually make this happen. Talk a little bit about what they're doing.
Well, what they've done in Kansas City that's a bit different from the way things typically work is they took entire teams and went off-site with entire teams. And part of going off-site with the manager and all of the co-workers together, they went through some initial workshop kind of training where they talked through what is our value proposition for GSA? Why does GSA pay our team to be here?
Right.
And so they worked through the details of what it was that they're supposed to do, how they would be measured in that sense, and then how they would work together with one another when they were no longer physically present with each other. And what we found from this is it had a tremendous positive impact. The productivity went up, the absenteeism went down, and even some of the members of the team who were very reluctant to go off-site to begin with became firm believers in telework.
We talked to somebody, and she said, I have to admit, I was a naysayer. I thought I needed to see people, and we needed to talk. So part of it is almost still that cultural resistance.
Well, we think it's a team sport. I mean, we've been doing a lot of research on this, and the conclusion is that having an agreement between the supervisor and the supervisee is necessary but not sufficient for this to work.
Yeah.
Because the real issue is with the peers on the team. It's not with the manager.
Pamela, have you had experience with this where you actually see it talking to the folks out of Kansas City, their sense was, hold on, if we all had ways to communicate, one of the things they said they missed by not being in is the water cooler talk. So they electronically replicated parts of that. Have you guys had experiences like that?
No, as you know, DoD is a very large organization,
right.
and some of the components within DoD have found solutions to the issue of communication. But yes, we have experienced it as well.
Give us your sense as to some of the lessons learned, because you guys have a pretty innovative policy out there. Tell us how you came up with that and how it actually works.
Well, we just revised our telework policy, and the reason for revising it was that the DoD leadership found telework to be integral to readiness when planning for pandemic and influenza. So it was the key driver for the revision of the policy. The snowstorm in the National Capital Region last February also further emphasized that telework will enhance the ability to continue operations during a crisis or emergency.
Well, D.C. has had, we've had snow, we've had rain, we've had wind, everything we could possibly deal with this year. So in a way, almost making that happen was part of the continuity of operation plan. We had to continue doing business, and you had to find a way to do that, right?
Absolutely. That was the key driver. But the leadership also recognizes that the telework is important in assisting in recruitment and retention. It does enhance the quality of work life and employee engagement, and of course, it's environmentally friendly. But the goal is to, with the new policy, is to increase the visibility and usage of telework and shift the culture towards one that is more accepting of telework as a normal way of doing business for those employees in eligible positions. So the message underlying this is telework enhances the capabilities of the DoD civilian to support the mission and the warfighter, and that we're communicating that telework is a normal way of doing business in the 21st century.
Now, Bill, you had some data points on this.
Yeah, we've actually identified 5 additional roles that are played oftentimes in the workplace, but with varying amounts. One of them is the water cooler guy that you were talking about.
Yeah.
This is a person who plays the role of just socially, what kind of conversation do we have about, you know, the Redskins yesterday, or maybe Kansas City Chiefs in case of Kansas City, or talking about current events in a chat-like manner with the other teleworkers to
right.
sort of bring them into the conversation.
And you guys did a GSA in Kansas there. They did a great way where they have electronically, they've replicated that so people can have those discussions.
That's correct. The water cooler manager, as they call him, when he posts something, he even starts with WCT for This Is Water Cooler
right.
Talk.
Right.
But in addition to water cooler, there's a socialite or social worker kind of a function that just talks about personally, so-and-so's sick, somebody's son just graduated from high school, to kind of connect the people to each other on a personal level to make sure that they don't lose that personal contact. In addition to that, there's a distribution list manager who has to make sure that when a meeting is called across the organization, all of the right people are actually getting on the distribution list, and this is just a person who's paying attention to making sure that the right people get invited to everything. There's a role of a technology scout because telework is very heavily dependent upon technology. And there are a lot of new things coming out in the desktop video and Skype and this and that. And it just, you need someone who is looking around to see what neat, cool new tool would actually be applicable.
See what's out there and how can maybe be used.
Yeah. And then finally, a facilitator and a
coach. Volunteer for that job,
okay,
by the way.
Yeah,
I'll check
okay.
all the gadgets.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do that.
And then you need a coach. You need a coach and a facilitator that brings, I don't want to say the stragglers, but the people who are not the early adopters or the easy adopters, that has the patience to help them figure out how to use this stuff. Now, all of these roles need to be recognized in the performance of these folks. And the manager needs to be scouting the horizon and making sure that they've got people playing these roles. And the people who play these roles need to get credit in their performance appraisals for having done so.
I want to bring in our industry experts. And Nigel, I'm going to tap you because you actually do a lot of teleworking. And talk personally first, because what was the biggest challenge what was the hurdle that you had to get over, or was there one?
Not with Intel. Intel, I believe, very aligned with our friends at HP and Microsoft that many, many years ago we worked out that we're global organizations across all time zones with people flying, traveling, attending events, seminars, expos, etc. This idea of everyone schlepping into the office 9 to 5 to sit at a computer when you could have a laptop and sit in your hotel room or your home office or the airport in Beijing, et cetera. So we've been drinking our own champagne for many years.
We all like champagne more than Kool-Aid, so thank you for that.
Actually, we used to say dog food at Intel years
ago. Right.
Marketing said, that's not right. Let's come up with something else. So we drink our own champagne, and it's really the only way to be mobile and efficient in this, fast-changing IT world that we're in. So personally, having been working on telework for the last 3.5 years in the federal space, it's been extremely frustrating trying to change the mindset of aging middle managers who don't like the, or don't have the word change in their vocabulary. But this year, 2010, of course, we've seen a tectonic change with OPM Director Berry. I think his first press engagement talked about putting a boot up the backside of telework. You know, then the president talking up telework, and then the gods truly shone down upon us by giving Washington Snowmageddon.
Right.
And it was all over by passing a law, I think, by then, Chris.
Susie Adams, she's the chief technology officer for Microsoft. We were talking about the role of technology, but my goodness, technology has come so far, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at, you know, even some of the technologies that around for years are an integral part. If we look at like VPN tunneling technologies, how we used to get onto corporate networks to be able to do things like remote desktop that have been around for years. If you look at the technologies we have today, from voice and video integration, from unified communications capabilities, and the unified communication capabilities that we see across the government, from just the video conferencing, some devices that Microsoft's made. We have this looks a little bit like the Loch Ness Monster. It is a video device that allows you to do actually 3D video conferencing in a room that we use on a regular basis now with both our government customers and internally at Microsoft to facilitate that.
And we were talking about the eating dog food or in Nigel's term, drinking our own champagne. I know you do it because you're on the road all the time. What was the more difficult part for you about this? It seems almost a mindset.
You know, I guess, you know, we've been teleworking at Microsoft since I've been here, and I've been here 12 years. Pretty much everybody, at least in the field home offices, and I think there's a couple of things. I think one is the cultural shift, and I agree with some of the earlier comments that it's the middle managers that usually have the biggest challenges with this, not being able to physically see their employees. But from a challenge perspective, I mean, from the way I've always used the technology as a technologist, it's not really been a challenge to use the technology. I would say that if we look at trying to help some of the older workers or just having these types of technologies to integrate with our customers has been some of the challenging piece, probably the most challenging piece.
Christina Morrison is Federal Marketing Manager at HP, and you guys do this a lot. And also all this technology, as we were just talking about, there is so much more technology out there that's even just part of the operating system, part of Outlook, whatever platform you use, it's right there, very accessible.
Yeah, you know, to the points that Susie and Bill and Nigel had made, I mean, it's about the culture and the cultural shift. But the IT that has happened in the last six, even 2 or 3 years with the embrace of social media out there, IT is here, and the capability is to implement telework, whether you're at the federal level, state and local level, or in the private sector. It's here, and it does provide benefits not only to employees, but productivity as well.
But part of this is moving. I mean, if you're on a desktop, it's hard to telework if you're stuck on that desktop, isn't it?
It is. But we see a lot of people moving. Bill and I were talking about this before the show began. We see a lot of people moving away from desktops and moving towards notebooks and other mobile devices because the world is mobile.
I know GSA, the laptop has become almost the standard, hasn't it?
Yeah, almost everybody's using a laptop. And I'll say at the World Bank, when I was there at IFC before I came back to GSA, we did a refresh on the hardware, and we were 87% laptop deployed within the International Finance Corporation. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you can get a laptop for less than $1,000, there's no reason to buy a desktop.
And we're talking about telework, and specifically, talk to me a little bit about, you have this policy in place. How'd this come about, and what's it essentially say? Give us a little elevator pitch on what this telework policy says.
Okay, the policy came about when the DoD leadership recognized within the process of planning for pandemic influenza that telework is an integral readiness strategy for continuing the mission or getting the work done when planning for the influenza or any type of emergency. So this was really the key driver for the revision of the policy.
And the policy essentially says, how is it different from the old policy?
This policy is more comprehensive than the old policy. It provides additional guidance, but it's primarily designed to shift the culture towards one that is more accepting of telework as a normal way of business. We're focusing on performance management for managers and addressing some of the areas that have presented challenges to full or robust telework implementation.
It's interesting because as I've been covering government for forever now, I'm 7,000 years old. So as I've been covering this, I always hear people talk about, hold on, we want to manage for results, and yet we always often spend time measuring, okay, how long have they been in an office? And it seems like telework actually can help us become better managers in a way.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And yet still a lot of resistance and people saying, hold on, am I still going to be part of this organization if I'm not here?
That's part of it. Any type of change from the normal way of operating or doing business is challenging.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about how do you actually bring this about? How do you encourage folks to actually be able to do this? And for you guys, it seems almost essential because you're often bringing in these new workers, these young folks, these people who don't have phones with cords, for goodness sakes. Their telework is part of how they do business, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
And so how do you make tie those young people in with the older folks? How do you create that common ground? I mean, the policy certainly helps.
The policy is really designed to help facilitate thinking, changing the way of thinking. It requires the heads of DoD components to promote telework within their respective organizations, to make every effort to overcome artificial barriers to program implementation, and to integrate telework into continuity of operations planning.
And that seems to be one of the real drivers is being able to do our business when there's snow or whatever happens.
Absolutely. Any type of emergency, and to include weather-related emergencies. DoD also recognizes that facilitating telework implementation is an important recruitment and retention tool.
Yeah.
To bring the young folks into the department.
Let me ask you one last question, then I'll let you go. Give us, for folks who are just thinking about this, may just be taking their early steps, dipping their toes into the water, what one thing would you suggest to them as they try and test this out?
To be successful at telework, particularly if the focus is to be ready to handle emergencies, practices is critical.
Yeah.
Increased use will facilitate increased proficiency. So I would say,
my mom always said, the more you practice, the better you get.
The more you practice, yeah. It should be, the telework needs to be periodically exercised or practiced to ensure its effectiveness.
Almost has to become part of the way you do business.
It has to become part of the way you do business, yes, as a normal way of operating.
Susie, talk a little bit about some of the technologies. I think there's so much technology that people have as part of their operating system, as part of Outlook, that oftentimes they don't even know that they have.
Yeah, so if we talk about the technologies that are out there, they allow you, the various remote access technologies, for example. So today, most people, they have a laptop or desktop. And in fact, what we're seeing across the board is really the consumerization of IT, where workers are wanting to use their own laptops, the ones that they purchased themselves, or their own cell phones, or their own, right, to access and do their daily jobs. And so if you look at technology there, usually the thing most people are concerned about is the data itself.
Yeah.
And getting access to the systems that they would normally have access to on their corporate networks. And so the way that people traditionally have done this in teleworking solutions has been through VPN tunneling technologies, where we go in, we create a virtual private network, and we have access to that corporate network resource, and then we'll do remote desktop sharing, where we'll go in and actually create a remote desktop session and then take control of a desktop that lives somewhere on the corporate network. And that's traditionally how people have gotten or gained access from remote locations in a secure manner. Technology has come a long way in the last 5 to 7 years when we start to think about accessing these and the proliferation of the technology that's out there. You're starting to see things like, well, how do I know that that laptop that's connecting to that corporate resource has been appropriately patched? Right, it's been up to date with virus software. Right, isn't going to introduce some security breach into the system, and so we're seeing things like network access protection capabilities that's just built in to Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008. It's just there; you can turn it on. And what network access protection does is it looks at your client computer. It looks at a defined set of policies that define the system's health. If that laptop or that device doesn't match those policies, it puts you into a separate network where a remediation server can then apply those patches and let you go back onto the network. And that all happens automatically without having to pick up the phone and call a systems administrator and say, hey, I think my laptop might have a virus.
Your computer is given a timeout.
Given a timeout.
Yeah. Nigel, I know security always ends up being one of the big concerns, but as we were just talking about, a lot of technologies out there now to deal with those issues, aren't there?
Absolutely. I think Susie covered it well both times. She's been teleworking for 15 years. How did she manage that?
Yeah.
She managed it the same way that any other organization, a public or private, manages it, and that is that they get a VPN tunnel. Intel, we have secrets, of course. Lots and lots of people want to know where Intel is heading. We may not be a government, but we have lots of things that we don't want to share with the world today. But our people may have to connect from a coffee shop in Tasmania, to pick a ridiculous example. And how do they do that? That they create a VPN tunnel, and it's just like they're there. And now we use video conferencing and all those kind of instant messenger technologies that is built into our Office 2010. And I do not need to get my car out of the garage and go into an office to be fully functioning for most days of the week. Maybe one day a week I need to go because there is something with face-to-face interaction that you just don't get over the phone. It's that human thing, the eyeball-to-eyeball kind of scenario. But it really isn't technology, and it hasn't been technology for many years.
Yeah, and Bill was very good, pointed out, flus. We're in flu season. All of a sudden, you don't have to really think about that in the same way.
I was thinking the reason he needed to go into the office was to get his flu shot.
Right, exactly.
But just think of that benefit, right, bringing in flu season. I mean, now, if you are sick, or you can encourage your neighbor who is sick to stay home and leave those germs at home, you can be even more productive and not spread germs, the common cold, diseases, et cetera, by being able to accomplish your work, yet again, get healthy and on the mend.
And I had the flu last year. I had this horrible H1N1. Don't recommend it, by the way. And although I lost 10 pounds, so guess I do recommend that. But you get so bored sitting there. It's like I wanted to do some work.
Right.
I wanted to be able to have some way that I could.
And honestly, I think that's how a lot of people felt on day 5 of the snowstorm,
right,
too.
Exactly.
Right? I'm a little snow crazy, and myself, I'm a teleworker. HP has been very good at providing me with the tools that I need to be a teleworker, and 8 years strong now teleworking. But it was kind of ironic that snow week when my husband was home and I'm on in the office working. He's like, but it's a snow day. I'm like, there's no snow keeping me from my office. Sorry, there's snow keeping you from the office.
Your commute between the bedroom and the office.
Exactly. Have fun shoveling the driveway. I'll see you on a coffee break.
Yeah, technology is absolutely not an excuse anymore. I mean, there's no reason technologically not to telework. It's all about the social behavior and whether or not the people are practiced at it. and this is one of the things I keep saying in GSA, I go, we have everything we need. Yeah. All we need is coaching and practice, coaching and practice, and it'll take off.
And we need to take a break here in just about a minute. But when we come back, I want to talk about, because there have been some people try and do this just on occasion. And that almost can be more detrimental to making this happen, because it's like anything that you do once a year. Well, hold on. Where's all the stuff that I need? What's my password? Can be really hard. So we're going to continue our conversation talking about telework with Bill Piott. He is the GSA, Christina Morrison from HP, Nigel Ballard from Intel, Susie Adams from Microsoft Federal, and Pamela Buda, who is from DOD and hopefully safe and sound. We'll continue our conversation talking about telework just ahead on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You're listening to the Fed Teleworks discussion panel. To learn more, go to fedstelework.com. View videos from top Fed execs, read more on telework resources, and be social with Fed's Telework. A recent study on telework shows that 93% of federal sector employees report that working remotely would make employment for an organization more desirable. The Obama administration is pushing for telework, and the telework bill has been passed. Find telework solutions for security, tools, and protection from HP, Intel, and Microsoft. Support your remote workforce with HP's Protect tools and telecommuter EasyPrint service, Intel processors and vPro technology, and Microsoft's Direct Access in Windows 7. Teleworking can improve your continuity of operations, especially during crises. Only 23% of Fed workers report that they regularly or exclusively telework. It is now time to increase that number. Work is something you do, not somewhere you go. Follow Fed Teleworks on Facebook and Twitter at Feds Telework. Learn about the future of telework at fedstelework.com. That's fedstelework.com. Federal employees, you know that the government is ready for telework. Hear what Fed execs are saying about working remotely right now. Stay with Federal News Radio and listen to the Fed's Telework discussion panel on issues directly affecting federal employees and the way they do business. Panel speakers include Bill Piott of GSA and Pamela Buda of DOD. If you want the scoop on what is happening in government news and telework, then stay tuned in. You can also learn more at fedstelework.com. This discussion is sponsored by some of the leading technology companies, Intel, HP, and Microsoft. The Fed's Telework discussion panel is hosted by FedScoop, the government and IT community's one-stop news source. FedScoop will also be holding their second annual Cloud Shootout on December 9th at the Newseum in Washington, D.C. Network with top executives and hear a candid discussion on cloud computing. Be sure to find out more and register today at FedScoop.com. That's FedScoop.com.
Welcome back to Work is Something You Do, Not Somewhere You Go, A Case for Telework. It's sponsored by HP, Intel, Microsoft, and FedsTelework.com, and it's on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are joined by Bill Piott. He is with GSA, Christina Morrison with HP, Pamela Buda with DOD, Nigel Ballard with Intel, and Susie Adams with Microsoft Federal. And we were just talking, because this has been a big thing for Martha Johnson, the GSA administrator, should introduce her, both in terms of green, and it's always interesting, because when I'm moderating green panels, feds always say, hold on, I want to telework, and I find it's difficult for some reason.
Yeah, the real issue with telework, and when you talk about working one day a pay period or whatever, we're actually referring to that as recreational telework. Because you never really get into the groove to have what it is that you need to have.
Yeah.
You know, we did a back of the envelope analysis of this, and one of the issues on telework is the institution is always saying, well, we want everyone to telework so that we can save on real estate.
Right.
And we'll talk about greenhouse gases and so forth, but it's always the institution wants to save. We did an analysis on back of an envelope looking at the costs of teleworking one day a week versus two, three, four. Mm. And what we found was one day a week is the most expensive solution for everybody. It costs GSA more money, and it costs the employee more money. But once you get to 3 days,
because you're not
a week,
getting any of the real savings, if they're only teleworking 1 day a week, you can't. They still need an off full office, everything.
Right, they need a full office. We're not saving any real estate. We have to have more VPN resources.
Right.
The employee has to have an office set up at home that's nice and quiet and set aside, and they have costs associated with
that. It's almost
that.
Like you have to set up two places.
You've got
Absolutely.
Two places,
yeah.
And you don't even save money on wardrobe.
Yeah,
you know?
Or parking, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So, especially if you're paying for monthly parking, that doesn't help you either. What we found was that at 3 days a week or more, both the employee and the institution start saving money. Mm-hmm. And the really interesting thing is that the employee starts saving a lot more money than GSA does. When you get to 5 days a week, these are standard statistics that are out in the market, the employee can actually save on the order of $7,000 a year of after-tax income.
Wow.
I mean, that's $500 a month disposable income. If you take an average federal worker, and I'm not sure what the average wage is, but it's probably $85,000, $90,000 a year before taxes, and you say, we're going to put $6,000 back in your pocket every year, that's a huge benefit from the employee side, even though GSA is also saving money at the same time.
And does the office thing become an issue for employees if you say, hold on, you're going to telework so many days, but we're not going to have an office for you, you're going to hotel or whatever they call it. Do people go, hold on, then I'm not really part of this organization if I don't have a place to put my stuff?
Well, I think, you know, I would defer to my fellow teleworkers here, but my take on it is, and I have a psychology background, so that's where I'm coming from on it. We all have to have a home somewhere. And no one minds going and staying in a hotel as long as they have a home someplace. So you have to have a principal office somewhere. And so it's either going to be in your home or it's going to be in an office building someplace. And once you get over that to say our principal office is in fact in my home, then everywhere else I go, I can stay in a hotel.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. I think then you have that feeling of, well, I'm just visiting when I'm here at the office at a physical building, but my true office, where my office phone number rings, is back in my home telework office. And being able to have that touchdown space and a true place in your home that is actually an office and not your dining room table where, you know, it's covered with other stuff, but a place that actually is an office and you can have your privacy and function and think is really what every teleworker
in a professional
needs.
Manner.
Yes.
And I mean, the other thing we've done at GSA now, we just deployed IP telephones, so we have soft clients on all of our laptops.
So that means your phone number follows you around wherever you are.
Yeah, my office phone is wherever I am. I mean, if you call me on my number, it finds me.
And another benefit there, where IT is making it beneficial to become a teleworker, and that the advancements made with technology just keeps building and building a case for mobility and for remote working.
The one of the challenges here is that, hold on, where is, and I want to talk to the other two teleworkers who do this a lot. Nigel, how do you deal with that? Do you end up having an office? Cause it seems like one of the psychological things, if I don't have an office, am I part of this organization?
Well, actually I'm moving, Intel location in April. And, at the moment I have a designated cube at the office, although I'm not there very often. And come April next year, I elected to lose that and will occupy a mobile worker space should I ever need to go to the office. And to Christine's point, why did I do that? I did that because I decided that the box room, the spare room at my home that I converted into an office and has shelves with, you know, documents, files, et cetera, is really my office. And when I'm not here, I'm a mobile worker. I just actually have my laptop swapped over. It has Wi-Fi and it has WiMAX in it now. So I can get broadband from two different technologies. And when somebody sends me one of those gigantic email attachments, I'm not as hosed as I was 10 years ago. So, you know, it's a very efficient way to work. And I know people that have that have teleworked for years and became comfortable with the fact that just because they're not in the office 5 days a week doesn't mean they're going to miss out on the promotion or they're going to miss out on the scuttlebutt, you know, of who's secretly dating who in the office. You know, there's more to life than that. You know, it's more of what you achieve as opposed to how much FaceTime you put in at the office.
You know, it's an interesting point that you make, Nigel, about the email attachment, because another element that we found of this is looking at really high-performing organizations with highly distributed workforces. They also have a very robust collaboration platform associated with them. And one of the reasons, or shall we say, an outcome of a collaboration platform and a reason to move toward it is to eliminate all those gigantic email attachments. And when we start talking about the security of the information, et cetera, the less information there is in transit, then the more secure it can be kept.
Yeah, and I always say the first step to true collaboration is to stop emailing everything around, stop trying to turn email into a collaboration platform. And I wanted to bring Susie in on this because one of the real enabling technologies is cloud computing, where all of a sudden you have access to information almost every place.
Absolutely. And if you go back to kind of the information worker and the tools that they're using today and kind of the consumerization of IT, what we're seeing is they want to be able to access this information remotely from any device. And there's lots of different ways to do this. You can use a mobile device to access data that happens to be stored in a corporate network, or as you say, it's stored kind of in the concept of a cloud, right? Either this could be a private cloud or it could be a public cloud hosted by somebody like Microsoft or Google or Salesforce, or it could be a private cloud that just happens to live in an agency's data center, where they're doing things and technology is available today to do things like access office applications through a web browser, to be able to open up instead of the email attachments that we were talking about just a few minutes ago, to store some of these large documents on, say, a SharePoint or collaboration site and be able to, from your phone, based on an email you received, quickly navigate to that site and securely access that document in a browser application, comment on that document, make changes to it, save it on that collaboration site, and kind of be on your way, regardless of where you happen to be at that moment in time.
There was an interesting irony, and we reported that GSA is actually looking at pulling some of the funding that it provides to some of the telework centers, largely because they're not really used that much. People would rather be at home. And there was an ironic little part of that in people have better technology, by and large, at their homes than they even had at those telework centers. I have more bandwidth. I have better, you know, I can do more. Part of that technology just being so ubiquitous now, you have access to it every place.
Well, I tell you, when we get to the 4G telephones across right. the board, right. you're going to have, you know, 5 or 6 times the bandwidth to your telephone, to your cell phone, than most people do at home right now.
I think one of the challenges today in the government space is really, you know, it is a cultural problem, but it's also a policy and process problem. If you take a look at the process of just getting some of these technologies on approved product lists, take, for example, in the DoD space, the JITC space, we just took our OCS, our Office Communication Server product, through that process. We're really excited it's there because now different agencies can actually purchase this because it's on the approved products list. So I think sometimes it's not the fact that the technology doesn't exist. It's that the processes behind for actually purchasing the technology and deploying it at the individual agencies takes a significant amount of time because of just the historical nature of how agencies procure technology and how they deploy it.
And is that because of the security issues? Is that the big hurdle here?
I don't think security is a technology problem. There's lots of different technologies that you can employ today that are extremely secure. Take, for example, looking at just unified communications or the ability to do chats with video. I've heard many different agencies ask, you know, well, how do I know that that's, you know, is that communication encrypted? How do we go about doing that? And today there are, you know, many encryption standards out there. There's one called SRTP that's IETF standard. It was actually created by Cisco and Ericsson, and Microsoft incorporates it in our products. So that traffic is encrypted, and if somebody were to, you know, try to spoof that traffic or try to grab that traffic, they wouldn't be able to see anything because it's encrypted. So I don't think it's really a security problem from a technology standpoint. It may be from a cultural perspective where you just can't wrap your mind around, you know, this doesn't seem secure. We have to be right inside these four walls with the guards and the guns protecting us to have this type of dialogue or have these conversations. So to take those conversations and put them over the wire, right, and put these things so that you're communicating over standard phone lines or even over secure communication lines like I just described is more of a cultural problem, I think, than a technology problem.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think to Susie's point, you know, it goes back to what Bill and I were talking earlier about the training, and you know, security is a two-way street. It's you as the end user need to take some responsibility for it and make sure that you are doing everything you can to make sure that your whether it's your mobile device or your laptop is secure. At HP, before I can even after I hit the on button to turn on my PC in the morning, it quickly asked me for a data encryption password. And then it comes to the Microsoft boot, and then I have to provide another password. Then I get on the VPN and provide it another password. So they take passwords.
I'm exhausted
already. Exactly, right? And they're all different. So, you know, lots of 12, 13 character passwords. Yeah, so if I could only be like Bill with a
Bill's
cat
holding
card.
Up his HSPD 12
we get
card.
Yeah, we get those from HP, by the way.
All right. Yeah, so.
No, I would say on the security, the issue is really not technically is it possible. It usually breaks down at the implementation. And that's why we have to go through the CNA on the systems,
right?
Because we on the government side need to make sure that all of the different contractors are in fact taking advantage of the different security features and not just turning them off because it's a pain to implement
right.
them. And it's one reason why we're standing up FedRAMP is exactly to get over some of these issues that that Susie was just talking about. And that's to do a CNA for a service provided from a cloud or whatever to say, okay, this is configured properly. And so then any agency in the federal government that wants to use it can without having to go through all of this administrative, all these administrative hurdles again.
Susie, I think you had had something to add.
Yes. Well, I was going to say we can help you with all those passwords and the tiling
right.
that you needed to do with something we call direct access, where it's just always on. So today, if you think about you know how you go through the VPN process you just described, where you go in, you enter a password, you have to kind of initiate that process. With Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008, we have a technology that sits on top of IPv6 that allows you to do direct. It's called direct access, and it's basically a tunnel that's just always on. Right, that's encrypted so that you're always connected to that corporate resource and that device is always securely monitored right, to make sure that the data is secure both on the device on the laptop and as you move into the corporate network.
And I know that was part of the idea behind everyone having an HSPD-12 card was so you had not only access to the building but also access to the network, and then it required so you had two forms of not only did it need your card attached in some form or fashion but also some kind of password, so you didn't have to go password crazy on everything.
Yeah, the access card,
and they all have
working.
To be different, and they all have to have letters right. and numbers, and you know you have to stand on your left foot to do one, and
you
right
have to
for,
change them all every 90
oh,
days.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, and the idea behind the card also is not just to eliminate the passwords, but it also does the role management within the applications as well. So if you have an ERP. It knows who you are and it knows what your roles are. So are you allowed to create a voucher? Are you allowed to approve a voucher? Are you allowed to authorize payment on a voucher, et cetera, those sorts of things, which also gets to DOD and their security clearances and your access to information based on.
An integrated single sign-on, you know, user experience that's facilitated with two-factor authentication using a HSPD-12 or in the DoD space a CAC card.
Nigel, I wanted to ask you because the telework bill has it changes the way people think about this stuff. Are you hopeful that will have an impact? Where all of a sudden, almost the default is yes, you can telework unless somebody can justify why you can't.
Well, that's a great question, Chris. This month will kind of be make or break for telework as a law this time around. We're in the lame duck session, and it's one of the bills But the trouble is, it's one of the bills.
Right.
There is no guarantee, you know, that it'll actually get called up. But the, in its favor is the fact that it's bipartisan, and it's heavily backed by the federal labor unions. They want it. The administration wants it. The Democrats want it. The Republicans want it. It's really actually hard to find, you know, a body of people who don't want telework. So I would say that my my champagne glass is about 4/5 full right now. There was a point you alluded to earlier about the extreme occasional telework that I just quickly wanted to touch on. Excuse me. You know, I liken this idea of, well, you know, you can telework when there's an emergency. You know, we'll have some laptops, you know, in a room, and they'll all be ready. And when, you know, something really bad happens or is impending, then we'll open the door. But that's kind of like the old locked emergency room with the flashlights. When the power goes out, you know, when the power goes out, the dude that has the key to that room is always off sick, or you can't find him. And when you eventually get into that room, most of the torches or the flashlights, the batteries have leaked, or they've just gone flat. And the same thing happens with encryption keys and software updates and the battery in the laptop. If your teleworker uses it as their tool every day, whether they're in the office or at home or remotely, it's charged, it has the latest patches, it has the latest VPN passwords, and they know how to use it, A to Z. When you know, the balloon goes up, to use that phrase, the last thing you want is for everyone to rush to a cupboard to grab a dead laptop and then scratch their head and think, now how did this thing work? You know, when I was trained 6 months ago.
But I think, Nigel, to your point too, sometimes you just don't know when the emergency or the coop situation is going to pop up. And to Bill's point, you can't look at telework as an occasional thing. It is something. It is. It needs to be a part of how everyone's doing business.
And it doesn't necessarily, you don't find out while you're at work that the next day you're not going to be able to come to work.
That's Bill Piott. He is with GSA. Christina Morrison of HP, Nigel Ballard with Intel, and Susie Adams with Microsoft Federal. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, we're going to ask the question, what's the one step that people can take to actually make telework a reality? That, when we come back, we're talking telework on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's the scoop. The government is ready for telework. You are listening to government executive speakers for the Fed's Telework Discussion Panel, hosted by FedScoop, news source for all things government and IT. Keep it here to find out more on up-to-date highlights on telework and what Fed executives are saying. Panel speakers include Bill Piott of GSA and Pamela Buddha of DOD. Stay tuned to hear more about the latest news on initiatives to support and increase telework within the federal sector. Go to FedsTelework.com to find out more. FedScoop and sponsors Intel, HP, and Microsoft are bringing you the Fed's Telework Discussion Panel. Keep it here on Federal News Radio and go to FedsTelework.com. For more from FedScoop, go to FedScoop.com and register for the second annual Cloud Shootout event being held December 9th at the Newseum in Washington, D.C. The shootout will bring together top executives for a day devoted to cloud computing issues. Be sure to find out more and register today at FedScoop.com. That's FedScoop.com. You are listening to the Fed Teleworks Discussion Panel. To learn more, go to FedsTelework.com. View videos from top Fed execs, read more on telework resources, and be social with Fed's Telework. A recent study on telework shows that 93% of federal sector employees report that working remotely would make employment for an organization more desirable. The Obama administration is pushing for telework, and the telework bill has been passed. Find telework solutions for security, tools, and protection from HP, Intel, and Microsoft. Support your remote workforce with HP's Protect Tools and Telecommuter Easy Print Service, Intel processors and vPro technology, and Microsoft's Direct Access in Windows 7. Teleworking can improve your continuity of operations, especially during crises. Only 23% of Fed workers report that they regularly or exclusively telework. It is now time to increase that number. Work is something you do, not somewhere you go. Follow Fed Teleworks on Facebook and Twitter at Feds Telework. Learn about the future of telework at FedsTelework.com. That's FedsTelework.com.
Welcome back to Work is Something You Do, Not Somewhere You Go, the case for telework. It's sponsored by HP, Intel, Microsoft, and FedsTelework.com, and it's on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. When we left, I said I was going to ask you guys all, what's the one step that people can take to at least start down this path? Because I know there's a lot of folks who haven't. And I'm going to start with Nigel, because you've actually done this. What is the simple step? Is there something easy that people can do if they haven't started this at all? And frankly, their palms get a little sweaty when they start thinking about it. What can they do to make this to actually try it out or test it?
Well, without shaming a particular federal agencies, there are a number of federal agencies who publicly say, oh, yes, we actively support telework. Employees inside tell quite a different story. So I would say the takeaway is, if you're a federal worker, is ask two people, your union representative and your reporting supervisor, am I eligible for telework? And if one of them says yes, then your next response would be, how do I make that happen? If they both come back and tell you no, then probably you're not eligible, because, you know, you're a postman or you're handling above secret, et cetera, et cetera. But your supervisor and your union reps do know. And to me, that would be the first step.
What I would recommend is to look at it as a team sport, and to actually take entire work groups and say, you know, this, every single work group in our organization is going to do a 90-day pilot. And you can go out and do it for 90 days. And then if you want to come back, or some of you want to come back, then we'll take care of you at that time. But you need to have all of the peers go out together. And before they go, they need to talk about what is it that they do to provide value for the organization, and how are they going to cover each other's back and support each other when they're working remotely in order to achieve that work. And if they do this, if we just do this work group by work group, we will find that a large percentage of people will be much more productive remote from the office building than in it.
And I got to say, I think that's the biggest lesson learned from your guys, from GSA's experience in Kansas City. You didn't do it like, okay, people, everyone, this is a team of 40 people who all are out there. So they're all in the same boat. And guess what? They're sharing lessons learned amongst themselves. It was great.
Yeah, and they actually started reaching out to each other in ways they never did in the office. They started having neighborhood lunches with people who lived in one part of town. And actually, they started a fitness club where they were logging fitness minutes that they were substituting, commute time for fitness minutes. Yeah. And when you do it as a team, the behavior and the dynamic is radically different than it is when it's one person who is perceived to be privileged or treated in a different way from the other people who are
or seen as the telework freak. You know, this is the person who we only see once a week, so we don't really. And when I was at another iteration in my former life as a print guy, we used to have meetings and we had several people who were calling in, and they always felt like the outliers. You know, you always forget about the phone people. And finally I said, okay, we're all at our desk. We're all calling in to the same number. That way we're all on the same platform. And that sort of goes to that idea. Everyone needs to be working from the same platform.
Right. You get much better at conference call etiquette when you're on the long end of the line instead of sitting around the
You sure do.
Phone.
You sure do.
You know, and I would add on to Bill's point. You know, if you were a telework manager and administrator trying to figure out how to start implementing a telework program within your agency, I'd call someone like Bill and ask him for advice. You know, what did you do? Lessons learned? Anything you would do differently? I think he's got a great story with rolling this out of teamwork. I'd also call somebody like Pam, who just recently wrote the DoD guidelines for telework. You know, if I wanted today to roll out a telework program, you just don't.
There's a lot of lessons learned out there already.
Yeah, and you don't just say to your employees, tomorrow we all telework. You need to make sure that the tools and the security are in place. And to the points that Pam had made, you know, are you eligible? Does your job, your day-to-day function, is that something that can go outside of the office here?
Interestingly, we found that there are a lot of people who are not necessarily classified as eligible who actually have telework agreements and are teleworking. So, I mean, it's not around the security or, you know, physical presence issue, but how one goes about determining eligibility, that's also in the eye of the beholder. What we're finding is many, many more jobs can very effectively be done remotely than people thought.
I believe you're right.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we're all in agreement. I think piloting in the team concept of conducting these pilots is really key. Change in any manner is always difficult and a little bit scary. And I think that when you go through these pilots, I think, you know, going out, doing your research, talking to people, learning what's worked for other groups that have similar types of charters, right, or similar missions, what hasn't worked, what type of workers this actually works for, and then, you know, encourage people to actually go out and participate in the pilot, to get educated on how to use the technologies, which technologies make sense for each information worker. For example, I mean, we can talk about just, you know, some of the tools that you have, from the type of headset you like to use to the type of, would you like a speaker headset or a speaker phone that connects to your computer? Learn what works, you know, and investigate it.
And a lot of in this area, this is something that so often we talk about information sharing. This is an area where people who are doing it really want to share their lessons learned. They're eager to share their lessons learned.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bill, I'm going to finish up with you, because I think so often we think of there's all these young tykes that are coming in, these people who have never seen phones with cords, for goodness sakes. And they just, they think of work, you know, we call this, you know, work is something you do, not somewhere you go. That's almost inherent to their DNA, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. And I think, one of the reasons why we have to do this, and I'm thinking about the collaborative environment and the distributed workforce as being two sides of the same coin. We must create a work environment that is friendly as opposed to hostile toward this younger workforce, because these folks who are 25, 30, 35 years old now are the future of the federal government. They can be much more productive than we ever were if we can just get out of the way and give them the tools and let them show us what they can do.
And in 30 seconds, as part of the pilot out there, you're actually looking in Kansas City, you're actually looking at real numbers. Your productivity, at least in the initial assessment, has gone up, and not just by token amount. It's dramatic increase in production.
Depending on what you're measuring, it's like 20 to 40%. Yeah. And this is among people who are learning how to telework at the same time that they're trying to keep their jobs going.
Yeah. We've been talking about telework. Work is something you do, not somewhere you go. The case for telework. It has been brought to you by HP, Intel, Microsoft, and fedstelework.com. And it's been right here on Federal News Radio. I want to thank Bill Piott with GSA, Christina Morrison with HP, Pamela Buddha with DOD, Nigel Ballard with Intel, and Susie Adams with Microsoft Federal. Thanks so much for great insights. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for listening to Work is Something You Do, Not Somewhere You Go, The Case for Telework, sponsored by FedScoop, HP, Intel, and Microsoft on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com, keyword FedScoop.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.